And the Angels Were Silent by Max Lucado. Chapter 19, The People with the Roses. Anything you did for even the least of my people here, you also did for me. Matthew 25:40. John Blanchard stood up from the bench, straightened his army uniform, and studied the crowd of people making their way through Grand Central Station. He looked for the girl whose heart he knew, but whose face he didn't. The girl with the rose. His interest in her had begun 13 months before in a Florida library. Taking a book off the shelf, he found himself intrigued, not with the words of the book, but with the notes penciled in the margin. The soft handwriting reflected a thoughtful soul and insightful mind. In the front of the book, he discovered the previous owner's name, Miss Hollis Maynell. With time and effort, he located her address. She lived in New York City. He wrote her a letter introducing himself and invited her to correspond. The next day, he was shipped overseas for service in World War II. During the next year and 1 month, the two grew to know each other through the mail. Each letter was a seed falling on a fertile heart. A romance was budding. Blanchard requested a photograph, but she refused. She felt that if he really cared, it wouldn't matter what she looked like. When the day finally came for him to return from Europe, they scheduled their first meeting, 7 o'clock p.m., at the Grand Central Station in New York. "You'll recognize me," she wrote, "by the red rose I'll be wearing on my lapel." So at 7 o'clock, he was in the station looking for a girl whose heart he loved, but whose face he'd never seen. I'll let Mr. Blanchard tell you what happened. "A young woman was coming toward me, her figure long and slim. Her blonde hair lay back in curls from her delicate ears. Her eyes were blue as flowers. Her lips and chin had a gentle firmness. And in her pale green suit, she was like springtime come alive. I started toward her, entirely forgetting to notice that she was not wearing a rose. As I moved, a small, provocative smile curved her lips. 'Going my way, sailor?' she murmured. Almost uncontrollably, I made one step closer to her, and then I saw Hollis Maynell. She was standing almost directly behind the girl, a woman well past 40. She had graying hair tucked under a worn hat. She was more than plump, her thick ankled feet thrust into low-heeled shoes. The girl in the green suit was walking quickly away. I felt as though I was split in two, so keen was my desire to follow her, and yet so deep was my longing for the woman whose spirit had truly companioned me and upheld my own. And there she stood. Her pale, plump face was gentle and sensible. Her gray eyes had a warm and kindly twinkle. I did not hesitate. My finger gripped the small, worn, blue leather copy of the book that was to identify me to her. This would not be love, but it would be something precious, something perhaps even better than love, a friendship for which I had been and must ever be grateful. I squared my shoulders and saluted and held out the book to the woman, even though while I spoke, I felt choked by the bitterness of my disappointment. "I'm Lieutenant John Blanchard, and you must be Miss Maynell. I am so glad you could meet me. May I take you to dinner?" The woman's face broadened into a tolerant smile. "I don't know what this is about, son," she answered, "but the young lady in the green suit who just passed by, she begged me to wear this rose on my coat, and she said if you were to ask me out to dinner, I should go and tell you that she is waiting for you in the big restaurant across the street. She said it was some kind of a test." It's not difficult to understand and admire Miss Maynell's wisdom. The true nature of a heart is seen in its response to the unattractive. "Tell me whom you love," Hausse wrote, "and I will tell you who you are." Hollis Maynell, however, is far from the first person to gauge a heart by a person's concern for the undesirable. In the last sermon recorded by Matthew, Jesus does exactly that. He does it not with a parable, but with a description. He doesn't tell a story, but he describes a scene, the last scene, the final judgment. In his final discourse, he puts into words the very message he has put into actions, love for the least. We saw in the last chapter the significance of the final judgment. We saw its certainty. There was no doubt as to Jesus' return. We saw its totality. Everyone will be there. And we saw its finality. For on that day, Jesus will separate the sheep from the goats, the good from the wicked. On what basis will he make his selection? The answer may surprise you. I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was alone and away from home, and you invited me into your house. I was without clothes, and you gave me something to wear. I was sick, and you cared for me. I was in prison, and you visited me. What is the sign of the saved? Their scholarship? Their willingness to go to foreign lands? Their ability to amass an audience and preach? Their skillful pens and hope-filled volumes? Their great miracles? No, the sign of the saved is their love for the least. Those put on the right hand of God will be those who gave food to the hungry, drink to the thirsty, warmth to the lonely, clothing to the naked, comfort to the sick, and friendship to the imprisoned. The sign of the saved is their love for the least. Did you note how simple the words are? Jesus doesn't say, I was sick and you healed me. I was in prison and you liberated me. I was lonely and you built a retirement home for me. He doesn't say, I was thirsty and you gave me a spiritual counsel. No fanfare, no hoopla, no media coverage. Just good people doing good things. For when we do good things to others, we do good things to God. When Francis of Assisi turned his back on wealth to seek God in simplicity, he stripped naked and walked out of the city. He soon encountered a leper on the side of the road. He passed him, then stopped and went back and embraced the diseased man. Francis then continued on his journey. After a few steps, he turned to look again at the leper, but no one was there. For the rest of his life, he believed the leper was Jesus Christ. He may have been right. Jesus lives in the forgotten. He has taken up residence in the ignored. He has made a mansion amidst the ill. If we want to see God, we must go among the broken and beaten, and there we will see him. He rewards those who truly want to find him, is the promise. Anything you did for even the least of my people here, you also did for me, is the plan. Perhaps you read about the fellow in Philadelphia who went to the flea market and found a frame he liked. It was only a couple of bucks, this dusty print of a country church. It was torn and faded, but the guy liked the frame, so he bought it. When he got home, he opened it up and out tumbled a neatly folded sheet of paper. It was the Declaration of Independence. What everyone had thought was a $2 painting at a flea market actually contained one of the original 100 copies of the Declaration of Independence printed on July 4, 1776. Valuable surprises are discovered in unlikely sources, true in flea markets, and true in life. Making an investment in the people the world has cast off. The homeless, the AIDS patient, the orphan, the divorcee. And you may discover the source of your independence. Jesus' message is stirring. The way you treat them is the way you treat me. Of all the teachings during the last week of Christ, this one is for me the most penetrating. I wish he hadn't said what he said. I wished he'd said that the sign of the saved is the books they have written, for I've written several. I wish he'd said the sign of the saved was the numbers of sermon they've preached, for I've preached hundreds. I wish he'd said the sign of the saved was the audiences they've amassed, for I've spoken to thousands. But he didn't. His words reminded me that the person who sees Christ is the one who sees the hurting person. To see Jesus, go to the convalescent home, sit down beside the elderly woman, and steady her hand as she puts the spoon in her mouth. To see Jesus, go to the community hospital and ask the nurse to take you to see one who has received no visits. To see Jesus, leave your office and go down the hall and talk to the man who is regretting his divorce and missing his children. To see Jesus, go to the inner city and give a sandwich, not a sermon, but a sandwich, to the bag lady who's made a home out of an overpass. To see Jesus, see the unattractive and forgotten. You might say it is a test to measure the depth of our character, the same kind of test Hollis Meinl used with John Blanchard. The rejected of the world wear the roses. Sometimes we, like John Blanchard, have to adjust our expectations. Sometimes we have to re-examine our motives. Had he turned his back on the unattractive, he would have missed the love of his life. If we turn our backs, we will miss even more.